from the Xfinity Studios at WVON.
You're listening to American Heroes, hosted by Cliff Kelly on WVON AM 1690.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. This is America's Heroes Group. It is September 7th, 2019. I'm Cliff Kelly, the host here. Our executive producer is Glenda Smith. Our digital media producer is Manny Corazzari. And we are pleased to continue with a show with some great information for you. On our live line, we have Janelle Alicia. Am I pronouncing it okay?
Yes, that's right. Hi.
Okay,
yeah, Janelle Alicia. I'm with Kaiser Health News.
Okay.
Nice to be here.
And thank you so much. She's in Portland, Oregon, a base senior correspondent on the KHN Enterprise and Investigations team, focusing on the serious illness, aging, and end-of-life issues. She has been a health reporter for more than a decade at sites including MSNBC.com, NBCNews.com, and the Seattle Times. And we are so pleased to have you. And, of course, you talked to us about this situation that happened before. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Mm-hmm. I wrote a story a while ago about the family of a young Navy nurse, Mawani Daniel, who had died in 2014 when she was having a baby at a Navy hospital in Washington State. And her husband, she died within hours of her daughter being born, and her husband didn't know what had happened because it was so sudden. She was healthy, and the baby was healthy, and she ended up having massive postpartum hemorrhaging, and he was left with no answers. But her husband found out that he wasn't allowed to get any answers about why his wife died, because he was barred from suing the federal government because she was an active duty military member at the time of her death. And so he brought a lawsuit trying to sue the government and get answers about her death, and still has not been able to. The case went his lawyer petitioned the Supreme Court earlier this spring to consider the case, and in May the court declined to hear the case, and so Walter Daniel, her husband, mm-hmm. has really been left without answers, and his point of view has always been that he wanted to fight for the right of mm-hmm. other military sure. members to be able to sue in cases of medical malpractice, just as civilian families can.
We are so pleased to have with us, and thank you so much for writing that, too. Attorney Steve Simon is in our studio. He's a sponsor of America's Heroes Group and an advisory board member, and also a wonderful counselor who helps a lot of people, and particularly veterans. Steve, help us with this.
Yes, and it's really a tragic situation. If we go back to the Daniels case, for instance, and Ms. Alicia's story, which was excellent and broke this.
Right.
It's interesting in that Justice Clarence Thomas, in that particular decision, wrote a dissent. This is not a man who is, you know, proactive. He's not a man who is particularly liberal. And here is what his dissent said. When the majority refused to take the petition for certiorari, which mm-hmm. is a review petition,
right.
For Mr. Daniels to be heard by the Supreme Court. Every other court begrudgingly found for the government because of the Ferris Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And what Justice Thomas wrote was, Ferris was wrongly decided and heartily deserves the widespread, almost universal criticism it has received. Such unfortunate repercussions, denial of relief to military personnel, and distortions of other areas of law to compensate will continue to ripple through our jurisprudence as long as the court refuses to reconsider Ferris. This is from Justice Thomas.
Even a broken clock is right twice a day.
And if I'm not mistaken, in that particular commentary, I believe Justice Ginsburg sided with Justice Thomas.
I was wondering what the count was.
Justice Ginsburg said she would have granted the petition. Mm-hmm. And so you have these two justices who aren't normally on the same page,
right,
thinking the court should have actually considered this.
And mm-hmm. and it is amazing because you very seldom ever see those two together. And if we go back to the Ferris Doctrine, mm-hmm. and where we've evolved over the years, it started a 2.5-foot long towel was left inside a man for 8 months, a soldier burned alive in his barracks due to a defective heating plant, a serviceman killed by negligent surgeon. All those cases, they all have in common that they were the cases before the Supreme Court in 1950, when the Supreme Court ruled that the U.S. government could not be sued by members of the armed forces for injuries they suffer incidental to their service. That's now known as the Ferris Doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
And I must tell you, this principle has evolved, and tens of thousands of active duty military service killed, injured by others, have been denied, even carelessness, sometimes intentional. And it's been applied, this Ferris Doctrine, to bar recovery in cases involving training mishaps, on-base car accidents, and even in cases involving sexual assault.
Wow.
So let's go back into a couple of other ridiculous situations where the Ferris Doctrine was held to apply.
Let me just say this, Consular. Joining us also on our live line, he's on the way here, I believe, but Congressman Danny K. Davis is with us. Congressman, thank you so much.
Yes, sir. Okay. Cliff, how are you doing?
All right. Are you on the way, I hope?
Well, you know, I really kind of got confused because I was listening, and I said, well, I guess they came on early.
Well, listen, we have something for you. That's the reason I'm asking specifically. But just hang on, okay?
All right.
Yeah, you've heard both of our great folks here, the Consular Seidman, and, of course, what Janelle Alicia has done, giving us this great information. What do you have an opinion on this whole thing, the Ferris Act?
I do.
Yes, I figured you did.
And the reason I do, you know, there are different thinkers and there are people who think a certain way. And I think that people should always have the greatest opportunities to express themselves. And if decisions are made contrary to what they think and what they feel and what their rights ought to be, that they still should have the right to do it. And therefore, I would be, you know, in favor of the individual having as much opportunity for review as they can get.
Mm-hmm.
And if they disagree with the court, or if they disagree with the military, at least have the opportunity to express by suing, you know, which is a legal way of expressing your position. And then if the next level says, no, you're wrong, this isn't what's going to happen.
Well,
you still have the opportunity.
You sure? Okay. Yeah,
Congressman Steve Seidman, it's nice to talk to you. As I understood it, in August of this year, there was the National Defense Authorization Act And actually, in that act, inside of that act, there was a provision that could overturn part of the Ferris Act. And that's the legal precedent that we're faced with here, Congressman. And that is the act that prevents malpractice cases, no matter how ridiculous and how terrible the care was. And the provision in the National Defense Authorization Act, as I understood it just a month ago, less, was that the provision would allow those serving in the military to bring medical malpractice lawsuits, but it would keep a bar on negligence lawsuits in place. And I don't know where that stands right now, but in my opinion, changing the Ferris Act is going to take an act of Congress. We've heard this before. Mm-hmm. We need an act of Congress. That's the only way the Supreme Court has made it clear that 50 years ago, for whatever reason, the Supreme Court decided that the Ferris Doctrine should apply. The only way it's going to be changed is an act of Congress. And I want to say it's going to be a game changer if that happens. People in the military who give their lives and put themselves every day on the line do not have the same rights that somebody on the street such as I do who has never served. And I think that's not proper. And we saw that with Ms. Alicia's investigative piece on the Daniels situation. This individual still does not have answers. So I would give of myself whatever you need, but I think that this is afoot. And I guess the question I have to ask, if you know, is where are we at with changing and where are we at with the National Defense Authorization Act and the provision?
Well, I would think that the likelihood, and of course, issues would have to get raised and raised at a sufficient level. I think I'll try and do a bit of research.
Yeah, well, maybe I can help here for a minute. It sounds like the bill proposed by Jackie Speier in California was part of the House version, the House 2020 National Defense Authorization Act, and that passed, so it was included in the House version. I know there were Republican co-sponsors. I know the Senate version has been approved, and now I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Congressman, but I think a conference committee needs to iron out the differences between the two versions. So I guess what's in question is whether it's still an option and whether you're optimistic that the House version, this particular provision in the House version, will get to go forward.
I think if there is enough awareness raised and enough conversation about it, mm-hmm. and effort put forth, it would definitely be on the table.
So can I interrupt, Congressman? I'm sorry. I don't mean to interrupt, but how do we do that? as a lobbying body, please tell us how we do it. I'd like to help, but we...
You know, you could contact as many individual members in both the House and the Senate as possible, or as you would care to do so. Members have a way of just going to the floor, making 1-minute speeches and 5-minute speeches just to talk about anything that they want to raise and just get in the public's way. And then members even get an opportunity to take out sometimes a 30-minute block of time or perhaps a whole hour if there's a group of members who'd like to get 30 minutes or an hour and just go to the floor and talk about it for that whole length of time, just raising the issue. And then, of course, there's the whole business of writing letters and communicating to every kind of outlet that there is. Of course, this is obviously a great outlet right now. And maybe even citizens who are listening, or people who are listening, veterans who are listening, individual mm-hmm. veterans, as well as veterans groups like the VFWs and the American Legion Post, and can you know, do the same thing, get enough information out in the public way. And the conference committee would probably make absolutely certain to have it on the agenda when the conference committee meets.
Is that coming up real soon? I haven't been able to see the schedule for that. Can you tell us? Maybe people would.
No, I've been away. I've actually been away for 6 weeks, and we're just going back. But we could really check when we mm-hmm. go back Monday.
Congressman, I'm a political novice. You know, it's something that in all my years I've never been involved in. Is there any way that I could maybe contact your staff? I'll be happy to take the lead with as many people that want to. But unless we get an organized approach to this, I feel like it's everything else. There's got to be enough pushback and push. Otherwise, nothing will happen. So if I could maybe get some information and talk to somebody in your office.
I agree. If you call Dr. Caleb Gilchrist in my office Monday, and the number there is 202-225-5006.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
That's
and
great.
So Caleb will take that, and then when I get there, we'll get together and put our heads together and see how we can begin to move it.
That sounds great. It really does.
Because this is just so ridiculous. And Miss Alicia, if she hadn't come up with this, you ought to be congratulated again, because there are so many people who knew nothing about this.
Yeah.
Try to get people who are on armed services. I'm not on armed services.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, unfortunately, I've never been. But you can only be in where you can be.
Yeah.
And you're right. Congressman, I've just got to cite one other instance of how ridiculous this is. There was a guy, Dean Witt. He was an Air Force staff sergeant. He was mistakenly transferred after a routine surgery for appendicitis to a children's unit, administered a lethal dose of fentanyl, then left with an improperly inserted breathing tube. Of course, he suffered severe brain damage and later died. Of course, he was precluded by the Ferris Act. And now is the time to act, I think, Congressman, and anything I can do, and I'd be happy to.
And you know the bad thing about that also, Consul, is we all know, doctors don't have to be real careful, do they?
No, there's no disincentive.
Exactly.
We're criticized a lot for medical negligence cases when we bring them.
Yeah.
However, in my 38 years of practice, I can tell you I believe it's helped the safety of private medical care because of the lack of accountability. Mm-hmm. Here we have the lack of accountability.
Right.
Totally. It's the antithesis.
And knowingly. Yes.
And it's the antithesis of what should happen.
Right.
Well, we will certainly take it and see how we can help get it raised, and hopefully get it raised to a level high enough to assure that the Joint Committee is looking at it.
We certainly appreciate that, Congressman. And, of course, you know, you're on our advisory board and so forth, so just make sure you tell everybody the America's Heroes group is supporting you on this, okay?
And all right.
Now, we got one other thing.
Is he still coming in?
Huh?
Is he still coming to the studio?
Are you still coming in or not?
I think I've got my schedule confused, so I'm kind of not having the opportunity. opportunity to do so.
Okay, the reason for it, he can't make it. We had something here for you. You know what it is, don't you? A birthday cake.
Well, you know, I appreciate that so much, Cliff, and all.
Hold on a minute.
And I've had a wonderful, my birthday was actually yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And I've had so many wonderful experiences and things from individuals that I've been a surrogate father to, a surrogate whatever you want to call it, people that you've forgotten and kids who called me from all over the country and all over the world.
My executive producer, Glenda Smith, is very upset because she made sure to have, she told me, listen, when the congressman comes in, whatever you're talking about, cut it off. Because we're going to bring in his cake, and she's...
Yeah, I messed that up, and you know, I've been out, doing what you do, campaigning and getting signatures, and got two or three other things that I've just got to do. But I appreciate it so much, and I appreciate the discussion. Because I've been listening in my car to the show.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what threw me off.
Okay.
I know 4 o'clock, but I said, let's say 4:45. And so, but at any rate, it's a great effort. And I will tune up on Monday.
Great.
And I want to thank your guests for really bringing it to our attention, because that's how you make things happen.
That's true.
In this country. If somebody hears about it, somebody learns about something they had not paid much attention to, or they may not have known about it, and an activated citizenry.
Right.
Is the only safeguard that we have for democracy. And so we'll dig into it.
Thank you so much, Congressman. Appreciate you.
Okay.
All right. And again, happy birthday to you. Okay.
Thank you so much.
All right. Alicia, you have done such a great service because we know so much more about this because of you. And
thanks so much.
Thank you. And we'll be following up. Attorney Steve Seidman, of course, is really on top of this, and the congressman gave him the name of the person that he'll be calling, Dr. Caleb Gilchrist. And
I'll do that Monday.
I know you will.
I will.
All right.
Great.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you
so much for having me. Yeah. Have a nice evening.
Pleasure. You too now.
Sure.
All right. Stay with us.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, the host of America's Heroes Group. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident or the result of malpractice, you have only one chance to get the compensation you deserve. You need a law firm you can trust with experience and resources who will fight on your behalf. With a proven track record of excellence both in and out of the courtroom, call Seidman, Margulis, and Fairman at 312-781-1977 for a free consultation, or visit SeidmanLaw.net. That's Seidman, SEIDMAN, Law.net.
Hi, we're the National Women Veterans United, the proud sponsors and partners of the American Hero Group.
Our mission is to ensure that women veterans are aware and have access to their VA benefits, resources, and entitlements. We monitor current or pending legislation that may impact VA eligibility and services.
We're located at 7907 South Racine in Chicago, Illinois.
And we provide a safe place for women to come relax. We have a meditation room. They can get food, clothing, housewares, whatever emergency services they may need.
We're the only Women Veterans Center in the state of Illinois. We are members of the Army, Navy, Marines, Air Force, Coast Guard, National Guard, and the Reserves.
Hey, Cliff, where can a veteran business owner go on the south side of Chicago for breakfast, lunch, and dinner meetings?
I'm a veteran, and that's an easy answer. Pearl's Place on 39th and Michigan. Pearl's Place has free parking available across the street. Reasonably priced, quality food that tastes delicious. veteran owners, there's no place like Pearl's Place.
Hey, I'm Sister Soldier, proud partner of She Voices on America's Heroes Group. She serves, she matters, where your change becomes empowered. Also, watch me on the web at SheThatInspires.com or YouTube. Remember, I'm every woman because I am just like you.
Hi, this is Cliff Kelly, WVON host and honored veteran, inviting you to listen every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m. as I host America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power regarding the treatment of veterans, retired, and active, discussing concerns for affordable housing, social services, Medicare, and all services geared to veterans. America's Heroes Group, where we speak truth to power.
Good afternoon. This is the Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON. This is America's Heroes Group, Partner University of Chicago Office of Civic Engagement Programs Roundtable. I've got some great people in here that are going to give us some great information about this new coordination we have with these wonderful people. It's Saturday, of course, September 7th, and our call-in number is 312-374-8130. And we are pleased to have back Ryan K. Priester, Director, Community Programs Accelerator, the University of Chicago Office of Civic Engagement. How are you, sir?
I'm well. How about you, Cliff?
Good. You're looking well.
Thank you. You too.
That's great. That's great. Also, we have Jennifer Maddox with us, Executive Director of Nonprofit Future Ties. And get this, she is a Chicago police officer.
Yes, I am. How you doing, Cliff?
I'm glad. Good. Good to see you.
Good to see you
great,
as well.
Great. We talked about your area and so forth before. And
right.
I think it's great what you're both doing. We're just pleased to have you back. The discussion, nonprofit Future Ties programs and services along with their work with the Community Programs Accelerator. Who wants to start on that? How about you, Ryan?
Sure. I'm happy to start. So it's an honor to be here with Officer Jennifer Maddox. Part of our work at the University of Chicago's Office of Civic Engagement is to support community-based groups like Future Ties and the work that Jennifer Maddox is doing to help empower the people within these communities to achieve their own goals. And there's no better example I know of that than Officer Jennifer Maddox. She has a very unique program operating out of the Parkway Gardens housing complex, which is about 63rd to 67th and King Drive.
Right.
And I believe there are 1,100 school-aged children on that facility. Jennifer is working with both the parents and the kids within that facility. She's brought together a unique model that supports the growth, the development, education, and workforce training for both parents and young people. And we're pleased to bring the resources of both the university and university medicine to support the work that she's doing.
You said in university medicine?
That's correct. So recently we brought in Dr. Brad Stolbeck and some of the folks from La Rabida Hospital to provide some social-emotional learning support for the youth. We've worked directly with the parent team that Jennifer has. Again, her focus is on empowering that community, so she's hired parents within that community to provide mentoring, tutoring, and support for the families of Parkway Gardens. And we've been pleased to bring in Dr. Stolbeck and his team to provide some training and support for those parents as they do this work.
That's great.
Thank you.
That's great. Go right ahead, Jennifer.
Wow. Thank you, Ryan. I would love to start off by actually giving a shout out to my staff at Future Ties that I know is listening, because we today had a back to school event for the kids in the neighborhood, and we had approximately 400 to 600 young people that came through the church, Parkway Christian Church on 6600 South King Drive. Kudos to Pastor Morris for allowing us to use his facility in order to make sure we could see those smiling faces today.
400 to 600.
Exactly, yes. About 400 to 600 young people came through the church today, yes.
Now, what exactly, Jennifer, does... What is the program really? You're keeping people out of trouble, obviously. You're doing a whole lot of good things. But tell us, what are you most proud of? What is it that you're doing that is the most important to you?
Well, the most important to me is actually being able to work with our young people and watching them grow up. And many of our young people now are going off to college. And so they come back and work and assist Future Ties because they know of what they received working, going through our program. So now they want to come back and help and assist some of their siblings and their cousins as well.
How long have you had Future Ties?
Oh, so Future Ties has been in existence since 2010.
Okay. Oh, so, okay.
Yes.
When you talked about people coming back from college, I was wondering. You've had some folks there for some time.
Yes, we have.
Yeah.
Right. We started off pretty much as like a drop-in center, and then we did an assessment of the area, and we found out that the parents didn't have access to after-school programming or summer camp programming. So that was one of the needs of that community. There was no playgrounds in the area. There was nothing that the young people could actually do to stay out of trouble. So that's when Future Ties kind of gave birth to it.
The one thing, too, Jennifer, all these things that you've been doing, you are a police officer.
I am. Yes, active. So, I'm still active.
Right, I know. So, which is great. So, you know what my question is? How does that work out? That's a good thing.
It's a great thing. Actually, it gives the families an inside track to working with other police officers as well as myself.
Exactly.
So
you know what I'm talking about.
It's always bridging the divide between community and police. That's one of the things that we do. I currently work in the Office of Restorative Justice Strategies, and our main focus is to bridge those divides within the community to make sure that police and community don't have such a disconnect.
I think I made the comment to you before when I was a kid back when the earth was cooling. You know, we had I even remember the police car, the number 151. That was our...
Okay. That was your beat car.
Yeah, that was the beat car. Mm-hmm. And what did the people do? My parents and everybody else, because back then they weren't air conditioned. You need some iced tea? It was...
Sounds like you had a lot of beat integrity going on.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And a lot of that doesn't happen now. So that's why, and you know why in many instances, but I'm just... happy that not only that you're doing what you're doing, but I'm so happy that, you know, the university and also that the department allows you to do this.
Well, this is something that I do on my own time.
So that's what I wanted you to say.
Yes, something I do on my own time.
Yeah.
Yep,
which makes you even more wonderful.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. My passion is community. My passion is working with young people, even though my young people, my own personal ones, they're grown. But I've always known that we have to step up and be that village in order to take care of the children so that they can be successful in the things that they tend to want to do in their lives.
Do you have to get permission from the department to do this?
No, I do not. As long as I'm not on their clock.
It's on your own time, yeah.
That's
okay,
right.
Okay, I got you. That's what I didn't think. But they're probably very proud of you.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, they'd have to be. That sends a message to some other folks, too. Do you know whether there are other people in the service and police department that do what you do?
There are. There are plenty of officers that are giving back. You know, many times we don't get that shine. You know, it's always the negative publicity that police officers get, but there are tons of officers that are giving back to their communities daily.
That's great. That's a wonderful thing. I think that's fantastic. Ryan, tell us more.
Sure. So, again, part of what we are hoping to do at the university is to provide the kind of infrastructure support that's necessary to help Officer Maddox and the team that she has to grow and develop. So she has gone through the Civic Leadership Academy that we offer at the university, totally scholarship, which provided her access to Harris School of Public Policy coursework. Right. Help to network her with other individuals doing this kind of work around the city, because long term we're hoping to build a mass of people that are doing this kind of social impact work, particularly on the south side of Chicago. Mm-hmm. So what I'm charged with is thinking through the ways that we can use both intellectual material and our human resources in terms of our students. We've had a number of our students go out to Parkway Gardens to perform tutoring, to give Christmas gifts and so forth to the kids. But I think the thing that I'm most proud of is that we've been able, through leveraging the brand of the University of Chicago, to apply for grants at the Allstate Foundation and a number of other grants that have helped bring dollars to the coffers for her to hire more parents and to build, because the need is there in Parkway. So what we have to think through is how can we leverage the brand and resources of the university to support Ms. Maddox and the work that she's doing.
That's great. Now, how did the university come up with the idea? You were the director of community programs, I know, but
sure.
It just didn't happen.
No. So yeah. Our Vice President Derek Douglas, when he was in the White House under Barack Obama, was touring the country, and he heard the need from a number of nonprofits around the country for capacity building specifically. Mm-hmm. A lot of the nonprofits that we see, and I think Jennifer would attest to this, spend a great deal of their time chasing program dollars for individual grants.
Right.
So you'll get the summer school grant, but then there's nothing really to develop the team, to put together strategic planning, to make sure that you have a staff that can continue that work after one person may move on. So what we think about at the university is how do we put the kind of business knowledge and strength, as well as the best practices that we are getting from the School of Social Service Administration, into the hands of community people already doing that work? How can we be a partner at the table with them? And so that's really our approach, is to really find people like Jennifer who are out here doing this work, and God knows she does amazing work while being a full-time police officer at the same time. And my job in the background is to think about, okay, well, how can we apply for grants? How can we think about getting her more space? I mean, they're with, again, 1,100 school-aged children in Parkway Gardens, you know, she's in need of more space. So we're presently thinking through ways to get her a new facility across the street. We've been able to leverage some pro bono architects to come in and look at a potential facility right across the street that would allow her to leverage both teens and younger children at the same time. So I'm connecting with IFF and the trust here in the city to figure out if the university is involved in helping to structure this plan. Can we make this work? Because ultimately this will mean better services and hopefully a better quality of life for the kids in Parkway.
Makes a lot of sense. Just the fact that it's happening is just great. And, of course, using the university's name means a lot in itself.
Right.
And, of course, with the great work you do, Ryan, and then to have I just think it's great that you're going to have a police officer who is working with these people. You know, and it's on her own time.
Right.
You know, that's
I just appreciate the support.
Yeah,
you know, Ryan's team, everything that they've done, the university has been in my corner every step of the way. And without them, I don't know where I would be. And I really appreciate the whole team at the university.
What came first?
What came first is I actually was patrolling that area, Beat 312, and spent a lot of time in Parkway Garden Apartments chasing kids. And so I was noticing there were no playgrounds, there were no safe spaces, there were nothing. It was nothing there for the young people to enjoy, so they found their own enjoyment. And so just talking to the parents, and the parents were saying, well, there's nothing for the kids to do. They can't go outside, you know, of Parkway. They're a little scared because even if, you know, they're not in a gang, just because they live in that area, many people tend to associate them with whatever the gang that might be in Parkway Gardens.
In that area, even though they may not be involved.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so people are sometimes fearful to even say that they even live in Parkway, you know, just so that they can move around the city or in that area freely without someone putting a target on them.
And then you're patrolling the area and seeing these problems.
And talking with the parents.
Right.
And asking them, you know, what could we do? How could they help me and be more supportive of if we tried to do any programming, you know, in Parkway, would they be open to assisting? And they said yes.
Okay.
You know, and that's why now I'm trying to work with our parents even more because they really want to see their children be successful.
Sure they do.
You know, they want more for their children and they're willing to help. So we're able to work with another organization called the Southwest Organizing Project, which is allowing us to have a parent mentor initiative grant. And we're working with two schools this year, Dulles and Fisk, in order to have parents actually working inside of both of those schools 2 to 3 hours a day and assisting the teachers in those classrooms. That way they'll get more connected with the teachers and really find out what is the need of the school and be there to be supportive of it.
That is great. And I know the principal of one of those schools real well. I'm sure they'd be very happy about that. All right. It just couldn't be better. I still, Ryan, want to know, how was the hookup?
So I knew Ms. Maddox even before I worked at the university. So when I was a community organizer under the late Bishop Brazier, I was charged with going out to do outreach in West Woodlawn specifically. And Parkway is kind of in a unique place because traditionally the Woodlawn neighborhood has stopped at King Drive, and Parkway is on the west side of King Drive. And it wasn't really considered part of Woodlawn technically and not technically part of Washington Park because of the railroad yards that back up against it. And, you know, you hear a lot of stories about what's happening in Parkway, and I wanted to find out what was going on. So I just walked in the building and started talking to kids and parents, and they said, well, you need to talk to Ms. Maddox. You need to talk to Officer Maddox because she's the one to talk to. And so I finally tracked down Officer Maddox and learned about what she's done. And I got to tell you, Cliff, she's put a whole heart and soul into this. So when I moved into this position at the university, I was honored to try to find a way of supporting her. I mean, she's done everything that she's done since 2010 without ever receiving a paycheck. She's going to get mad at me. But this is all out of volunteer work. And so, you know, again, what resources can we bring to the table? How can we bring more attention to the work that she's doing? I think is important for the people of Parkway, which has a wonderful history. And there are a lot of success stories. I've seen parents go on to get their GEDs, to get their associate's degrees. Kids go on to college and come back and talk about this program. So, you know, again, my thought is how do we scale up? How do we make it stronger? And how do we promote what she's doing so that other people in other communities like Roseland or Englewood can see that a person can make a difference within their own community?
Well, what is going on is just great. You know, when you talked about, Ryan, the area, I can remember it really upsets me. I was going to say something. They would have had to bleep me. 63rd Street used to be unbelievable.
That's right.
You had Roberts Hotel there. You had all of these great things. In fact, that whole area, but particularly where that had a great impact on that community. I mean, just great things. And now, you know, what really upset me was when they put that damn truck thing, you know, this is where the hotel used to be. And this wasn't just a hotel. I mean, this was a huge place. It was two of the buildings. And sometimes Roberts would close the inside because the inside was a parking area. and have boxing matches. I mean, he had all kinds. He was just great. And he wanted to help everybody, you know. And that's, so now, you know, when you look at what that the Joe Louis Mill Company was right around the corner, now you could, if we needed a third airport, you could put it right there without turning down a building. So, I just commend not only you, officer, but the University of Chicago, because we got two people here together that are just making, it's going to make a big difference. It's already making a big difference. I think that's great. I used to be the chairman of the Parkway Community House.
Okay.
Wow. Mm-hmm. I was the chairman of the Parkway Community House. You know, right? That's right around on Ibarra.
It's great theater in that building.
Right. How'd you know that?
So my mom was in the Billie Holiday play at that theater.
Yeah.
She won a Jeff Award.
Legitimate theater downstairs. We
Douglas
had
Mann,
everything there.
Yeah.
Everything. We had over 40 teachers that were coming in to help people. We had the gymnasium, the kids, you know, and so forth and so on. We can leave that out. And that playhouse downstairs was a legitimate playhouse. And Parkway just, unfortunately, you know, whatever. But this is the same sort of thing that you folks are doing that is really, really making a difference. Because I see you, not only what you're doing already, which I just think is so great. I see a lot more coming. Thank you. What else would you like to see?
Well, expansion, of course.
Expansion.
You know, we're trying to expand. We're looking at a facility across the street, and it would allow us to actually be able to service the teens all year round, just like we are doing with the elementary age students.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we're looking to probably soon fundraise and get the word out that this is what we're trying to do. The teens have really been waiting a long time.
Yeah.
They've been promised a space for so long, and we just haven't been able to deliver yet. And we want to make sure that they have something that they can call their own space, that they will take care of, that it'll become sustainable because they will be able to work there and keep it up. So because after a while, Officer Maddox is going to be retired.
Not yet,
but, you know, it's coming down the pipeline. Yeah. But I just want to make sure that our families are up and functioning where they can one day possibly take it over and keep it going, you know. And when I get old and get in that senior building, they'll come and visit me and the kids, too. But I just would like to also, you know, thank Related Management for allowing me to stay as long as I've been there.
Great.
And just allowing me to work with some of the families and the parents and the kids there, and actually contracting us to do after-school programming and summer programming. So.
Beautiful. Ryan, we're so pleased that the University of Chicago, of course, is doing what you're doing.
Thank you.
Tell us more as we close out.
Sure. Mm-hmm. So we're really excited. We're going to be launching again later this month a free certificate in nonprofit management for leaders on Chicago South Side that want to come and get training. It'll be in collaboration with the School of Social Service Administration. So we're super excited about that. This is the first time the university has offered a fully scholarship-based certificate for community leaders. And this is our way of helping to support them as they're seeking to develop and empower their community. So we're super excited about that. We also offer a series of workshops. Again, if you're interested in learning more about how to become a nonprofit professional, and you can visit our website at communityprograms.uchicago.edu. And because it's back to school time, if you're interested in learning more about our college readiness and support programs, you can go to civicengagement.uchicago.edu.
Mm-hmm.
We have a number of tutoring programs like Maroon Tutor Match or the Office of Special Programs that provides programming and support for high school youth interested in going forward to college. So there are a lot of good things that we want to get the word out, but most importantly, again, working with our partners like Jennifer who are building the communities, and we're happy to serve as partners with them.
Well, you're doing a great job. I just think it's wonderful, Ryan Priester. The University of Chicago has so much influence and such a name, and for them to come forward and do all of these things, I just think is going to make a big difference.
Thank you, sir.
And particularly with policemen who don't get paid. We should talk about that since the mayor came and talked about our budgetary problems. Well, here's what we do. We have cops that don't get paid. Oh, that's great. All right. Thank you both.
Thank you.
You're wonderful.
See you next month.
Absolutely. Look forward to it.
Why are you going to see us next month? What does that mean?
So we're very excited to bring this segment where we're highlighting our community partners that we're working with.
I love
it. So that will be the University of Chicago's partner roundtable here on the Americans Hero Show.
Yay!
Bravo.
We're so happy and thankful to all of our listeners. Regarding any questions or concerns about affordable housing, social services, wellness care, please feel free to call America's Heroes Group at 312-803-2618. We're located at 155 North Wacker Drive, Suite 4250. We're so grateful to our partner, Mrs. Dorothy Lavelle, and the Chicago Crusaders on our article every week on veterans, armed forces, and their family members, which can be viewed online at www.chicagocrusaders.com. To subscribe to the Chicago Crusaders weekly column with the Governor of Talk Radio Voices, Mr. Cliff Kelly, and America's Heroes Group, call Chicago Crusaders at 773-752-2500 or send an ads to ads@chicagocrusaders.com and request a subscription. We are so grateful to everyone who is watching us live on Facebook. Please make sure you hit the Facebook like button. I apologize for stumbling. Mm-hmm. We're so grateful to all of our Facebook watchers live on Facebook. Make sure you hit the live Facebook button at the top of our Facebook page. Therefore, you will stay connected and will receive future notifications regarding shows, events, and information regarding veterans, armed forces, family members, and our community partners. Thank you, iHeart listeners. Thank you to our technical